I suppose we should read this again. In John 10, verse 1, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, I've wondered about this word, this fold, and it seems like in verse 16, I have other sheep which are not of this fold. There it seems pretty clear, especially comparing it with 11:52, that is Judaism, which are not of this fold, other sheep, that is Gentiles. But up here in verse 1, I don't know. I wonder if it could be a reference to the church. Sometimes, you know, there's a double picture. Anyway, the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And he puts forth all his own. He goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. A stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus spoke to them, but they did not understand what those things were which he had been saying to them. So Jesus said to them again, Truly, truly," here he gives some more explanation, "I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not the shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and not concerned about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep, which are not of this fold. I must bring them also." And they will hear my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life so that I may take it again. No one has taken it away from me. I lay it down on my own initiative. I have authority to lay it down. I have authority to take it up again. This commandment I receive from my Father." So here we have, again, I say this third I am of Christ. I am the door. He's the access, the way of access. He is the access into the presence of God. He says in verse 7, I am the door. Verse 9, I am the door. But last time we looked at this, at the fourth I am the good shepherd, verse 11, and I am the good shepherd, verse 14. And all that we might think what a good shepherd ought to be, that's what Christ is supremely, ultimately, transcendently, really. He is the good shepherd. And so we have these pictures bringing out these beautiful spiritual realities here. And I pointed out three implications, various ways, no doubt, of handling it, but three implications of his good shepherdship in this passage. One was is that he is. It implies an intimate relationship. An intimate relationship. It says in verse 3 that the sheep hear his voice. He calls his sheep by name and he leads them out. They know his voice. There's an intimate relationship, an intimate knowledge, a personal relationship. You know, Beth and you were saying that in this one class, was it on communication, speech? That the teacher was pointing out how the scientists have sent out messages into outer space to see if there's life out there beyond, and as yet we've had no answer, no response. But how was it? He was saying that, you know, that's no reason for thinking there isn't. Or you explain it. We don't get any communication back from God. Yeah, exactly. It says they hear his voice. And then secondly, ownership. It implies ownership. The Lord says over and over, my sheep. And so ownership by creation, ownership by donation, ownership by redemption. He laid down his life for the sheep and purchased them, paid the price. And then a third implication is that he cares. And we have this, like in verse 9, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The Lord leads us, feeds us, protects us. He cares. He loves us so much that he laid down his life for us. And so, the Good Shepherd. But there's others mentioned in this little allegory, this figure of speech. What are they? You have the Good Shepherd. What else do we have here? Got the sheep, of course. And then thirdly, we have what else? Who else?
Hirelings?
Yes. And who else?
Thieves.
Who else?
Robbers.
Who else? What is it?
The Father.
Well, the Father, yes. That really, I was thinking just of the allegory, though, the symbols, the wolf, and then one other. Okay, yeah, that's there too. Yeah, forgot about it. The doorkeeper, yeah. The sheep, yes. And one other, and that is the... Did anybody mention the stranger? Well, anyway, let's look at... I think all of those four, the thieves and the robbers, the stranger, the hireling, and the wolf, could all be summed up under the term enemies of the sheep. Enemies of the sheep. And in another way, I think they could be summed up as false shepherds, false caretakers, false leaders, false prophets, false teachers. Paul calls them evil workers. And so let's look at them today, and I trust it'll be profitable, not redundant, not trite. It really is quite a big theme in the Bible, a very big theme. I mean, for example, in Proverbs chapter 2, it says, it exhorts us to cry to God for discernment and so on, and then you'll be delivered from the evil man who speaks perverse things. Now, it's not talking about a fellow firefighter that's got a filthy mouth. It's talking about a false shepherd, a false leader who speaks perverse things, who perverts the truth. That's what that's talking about there in Proverbs chapter 2. In Isaiah 56, the warning is given about the false shepherds who are like dumb dogs and don't know how to bark. And they're greedy dogs, selfish. And then Jeremiah, different places, brings out woes to the false shepherds. In Zechariah chapter 11, woe to you, can't think of the worthless shepherds who leave the flock. And in Micah chapter 3, a woe is given against, he says, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel who say peace, peace, and so on when there is no peace, and they prophesy for a price. And so in the Old Testament, there's many warnings and against false leaders and false shepherds. And then in the New Testament, you've got Matthew chapter 7, beware of the false prophets who come to you like what? Wolves in sheep's clothing. Not wolves' clothing, but sheep's clothing. And then Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse, the Lord, I made the remarks about the beautiful stones and the temple and so on, and the Lord says it won't be one stone left upon another and so on, but one of the first things he says is, be careful, see to it that no one misleads you. Again, a warning against false teachers and false prophets. In Acts chapter 20, and Paul is giving this address at this pastor's conference in Ephesus, and he said, I'm telling you, there's going to be savage wolves come in, and even from among your own selves. And then in Romans chapter 16 is another warning. It says, keep your eye on those who cause divisions and dissensions contrary to the gospel, contrary to the truth, maybe it is. It says they are not servants of Christ, their God is their belly, and so on. And he says they deceive the hearts with their fair speech. They deceive the hearts of who? The unsuspecting. So watch out, keep your eye. See, alert, alert, alert. It's just all through the New Testament as well. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul says they are false apostles, deceitful workers. And in Galatians chapter 1, Paul has his anathemas against who? It was against false leaders and teachers who, what? Distort the gospel. And in chapter 2, he mentions false brethren. In chapter 3, who has bewitched you? And then you go to Ephesians chapter 4. He says, you've been given pastors and prophets and evangelists and apostles and so on, and to build you up, that you be no longer children, tossed to and fro and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, wherein they lie in wait to deceive you. And then in Philippians, Paul says, it's a safeguard for me, for you, and no trouble for me to warn you. Beware of the dogs. Beware of, what does he mean by dogs? The evil workers. And in Philippians chapter 1, he mentions he says, some preach Christ out of false motives, and so on. They were evil workers that he was talking over and over again. In Colossians, see to it that no one misleads you. And in 1 Timothy, Paul tells Timothy, I left you there at Ephesus that you might instruct certain men not to teach strange doctrines. And in chapter 4, his Spirit speaks expressly that in the last days there will be many who give heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons. They're hypocrites, liars. And then in 2 Timothy chapter 3, and he says they've got a form of godliness, but they deny the power thereof. From such, turn away. And they gather, accumulate to themselves teachers, satisfying their own lusts. And again, in 1 John, don't believe every spirit, but test the spirits. There's many false prophets going out. And they went out from us because they're not of us. If they'd been of us, they'd have stayed with us. And then in 2 Peter, almost needless to say, the whole chapter, chapter 2, is given to that very theme. It says there was false prophets among them, and there's going to be false teachers among you. The whole chapter talking about that. The same way in Jude. The whole thing is talking about false teachers, false shepherds. They crept in, they've snuck in, they've secretly introduced destructive heresy. And in Revelation, it says, you've put to the test those who call themselves apostles, but you found them to be false. You tested them, you found them to be false. So I'm saying here, this is no little theme, this matter of false shepherds, false leaders, false teachers. I mean, the pulpits are full of them in Christendom, full of them. Thieves, robbers, strangers, wolves that hurt, steal, kill, destroy. And so it's saying, watch out, be on your guard, analyze, consider. They're not wolves in wolves' clothing, they're wolves in sheep's clothing. They look like Christians, they look good. They sound good. They're not real obvious. They secretly introduce destructive heresies. They distort the gospel of Christ. Oh, they do preach Christ, but they distort, twist, turn a little something, a little strange. And so you've got to be not unsuspecting, but you've got to be observant. Now, it's true we don't want to be just, you know, go in the other ditch and just be overly cautious, overly analytical, overly fearful and all of that. But there is a balance there. Not to be gullible on the one hand and not to be critical on the other. So with that introduction, let's look at these four categories here of the enemies of the sheep. I'm putting thieves and robbers together because verse 1 does that. And then secondly would be the strangers. Third would be the hireling. And fourth would be the wolves. So first we have here in verse 1, thief and a robber. And it's mentioned again down in verse 8, all who came before me are thieves and robbers. It's mentioned again in verse 10, only singly the thief comes, steal, kill, and destroy. So we've got thieves and robbers. There is some difference, naturally speaking anyway. When you think of a thief, you think of some... What do you think of? Kind of subtle, right? Kind of sneaky, right? You know, I just laid it right there, and it's gone. It was subtle. It was, you know, the thief, if you he's unexpected. And if you'd known he was coming, well, you'd stayed up, but you didn't expect him. And he came and he's gone. And what I had here was gone. He took it with him. And it's subtle. It's sneaky. And but the robber, a little different. You think of a robber, I think of some violence, someone who is violent. And... You know, Bob was telling how that his grandfather used to have a store down at the junction of Luttman Road and Ringen, down in that area, and he kept a gun behind the desk to protect him and his goods against a robber who was going to come in and do violence. If it weren't for the violence, he wouldn't need the gun. I had a couple relatives that were mugged. I guess that's what you call it. Both of them, both of them are in a hospital parking lot. And... my aunt, they just ripped the purse right off of her arm. And so hard, I mean, she had it around her shoulder or something, threw her right to the ground. And the other was a stepsister, and I don't know if it was at gunpoint or not. I believe it was. And she gave, you know, she gave him everything that she had. And so they're really, neither one of them are hurt, but you know, it was such a traumatic thing, such a violent thing. It just emotionally shook them for days, weeks, especially my stepsister. I mean, she just shook her. She was violated, you see. And so thieves and robbers, I mean, this picture ought to come up to us, you know, of the violence there. They're taking what is not theirs. And so he gives some marks here of the thief and the robber. It says in verse 1, he does not enter by the door. Verse 1, he does not enter. The thief and robber, they don't enter by the door. They climb up some other way. There's that picture over there on the blackboard of that sheepfold, see? They don't go in by the door. The doorkeeper, he's there watching that door. And they climb up over the wall. They get in some other way. And so they don't enter by the door. And the door is who, Daniel? Christ. They don't enter by Christ, not by his person, not by his work. They are not Christ-centered. They enter, they climb up some other way. They are not, Christ is not central, not central in their life, not central in their preaching. They enter by some other way, not by regeneration, but by ordination, commonly. And as old J.C. Ryle says, an unconverted, unregenerate ministry is the dry rot of the church. One time I asked, I was attending, as a new Christian, I was attending a Wesleyan church up in Iowa, and I asked the pastor, I said, how did you come to Christ? How did you become a Christian? That's what I said. And do you know what he said? He started to explain to me how he got into the ministry. And I thought, man, you know, there's no door in your life. You came up another way, man. What is going on here? An unconverted minister. In contrast to Paul, he says, we preach Christ and Him crucified. He says, we determined to know nothing among you but Christ and Him crucified. He says in another place, I do not preach ourselves, but we preach Christ Jesus as Lord and ourselves as your servants for Christ's sake. Paul was Christ-centered. He made much of Christ, much of the gospel, much of the cross of Christ. The door was big, you see. And so they don't enter by the door, but by some, what's it say, some other way. Some other way. There was something else going on in their life, some other motive for them trying to get in and have a place in the sheepfold amongst the sheep. There was some other way, some other motive, something, some other agenda, some other bump on their tire. Yeah, they preached Christ, sure, but there was some other bump on their tire. There was some other thing they had to prove, some other forte. There was some other doctrine, some other pet thing, you know. And maybe it was money, and maybe it was popularity, maybe it was power, maybe it was preeminence. Diotrephes, he loved to have what? The preeminence. He wanted that preeminence. That's what he was all about. And Korah the same. There was envy involved. He envied Moses. And so that was why he rebelled. He said, the whole congregation is holy. They're all equally set apart for leadership. Why do you exalt yourself? He was a false leader. Judas, apparently the motive was money. And so these all these other motives that get men into the ministry, all these other motives, some other way, you see, that they climb up, some other thing that they desire. Another trait of the thief and the robber is in verse 8. All who came before me are thieves and robbers. You think of it historically. You know, I've got a book in there entitled World Religions. And I just started thumbing around through there, and it is amazing how many religions and religious leaders there were before Christ. I mean, we often think of Confucianism and Buddhism and so on, those big religions, but just down to the history of mankind, all these other ones and things and thoughts and ways that came before Christ, they were thieves and robbers until the true and good shepherd appeared. And take it not only historically, but take it personally. In all that came before, in our lives, before Christ, were thieves and robbers. They did not satisfy, they did not help, they led us astray, they were leading us off toward destruction until Christ came. Those that came before, thieves and robbers. And then a third attribute of the thieves and the robbers is down here in verse 10. The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. What a picture. Steal. Steal what? Steal souls. Steal your soul. Kill your soul. Destroy your soul. It's that serious. It's that weighty. It's that heavy. They're that mean. They're that fierce. They're that violent. They're that serious. They are that real. They really do damage to the kingdom of God, to the hearts of men. Steal, kill, and destroy. It says in 2 Peter, they make merchandise of you. Merchandise. They make merchandise of the souls of men. In Revelation 18, referring to Babylon, it says that they do business in gold and silver and so on, and at the end of the list is the souls of men. Steal, kill, destroy. You think of this man in this blind man in the previous chapter. These Pharisees were playing the part of thieves and robbers. I mean, they were trying, I don't know how deliberately, but inadvertently for sure, they were trying to destroy that blind man. I mean, they were trying to keep him from getting into spiritual reality. They're trying to keep him, they're trying to shake him away from Christ. The Lord had just touched him, had just done something real to him, was giving him a progressive revelation, and they were mocking him, they were putting pressure on him, they were saying, you know, they had said, if anybody confesses Christ, he's out, he's put out, he's excommunicated, he's out of the synagogue, he's out, ostracized. They were just trying to destroy his soul. Look what they did to the parents. They got the job done on them, as far as we know. They were afraid to confess Christ because lest they be put out. And so thieves and robbers, they steal souls. They rob the truth away. It says in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, if anyone destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him. There are some people who are, humanly speaking, destroy, damage the temple of God. It says in Romans 14 that we don't destroy him for whose sake Christ died. With your meat, with your eating, with your practices, with matters indifferent. Don't destroy. That's Bible terminology there. And so the thief and the robber, false shepherds, one description of them. A second, then, is the stranger in verse 5. A stranger. Why is he a stranger? Because he doesn't know the sheep and the sheep don't know him. What a description, you know, of a false leader. He's a stranger. And yet how often, how many pulpits in the land are filled? How many churches invite plain strangers in to fill their pulpits and take the part of a pastor? They don't know him, they haven't observed him, they haven't watched him, they don't know his life, they don't know his doctrine thoroughly, and you invite a stranger in to pastor him. Incredible that this goes on over and over everywhere, again and again. A stranger is not a shepherd. The true shepherd, it says in Proverbs 27, he should know the face of his flock. Know the face of the flock. It says in Hebrews 13, they watch over your souls. Quite a responsibility, quite a thing, quite a relationship, that the shepherd has to watch over. If a sheep is sick, And the shepherd doesn't know it. He's not doing too good, is he? He ought to know that. Know what's going on. Shouldn't be a stranger. Some people, it seems some pastors have a great, great, great gift to be able to pastor large churches and know the state, the face of the flock. Charles Spurgeon, for example. I can't remember exactly, but he pastored a church of 4,000 or 5,000, but it seems he knew them all. I think I remember reading that. This blind man, you know, he didn't know much, but he knew the shepherd's voice, and he was looking for the Lord. And who is he, Lord, that I may worship him? And he knew that he had heard the shepherd's voice, and that these Pharisees weren't his shepherds. They didn't have the answer. They didn't have the power. A third false shepherd is called a hireling. In verse 12, he who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, not the owner, leaves the sheep, wolf snatches and scatters. Verse 13, he flees because he is a hired hand and not concerned about the sheep. A hired hand, a hireling. And it says he is not concerned. In verse 13, not concerned about the sheep. He's a hired hand. And like I pointed out last time, there is no way that you're going to find a hired man as concerned about the goods, the buildings, the flock, as the owner. It's just, I can't imagine it ever be the case. You might find one that way. But in general, the hired man, he just is not as concerned as the owner. And often really can just take it or leave it. I mean, he's only there. He's there because of the paycheck. That's why he's there. If you quit paying me, I'm gone. I'm out of here. I mean, just give me that paycheck. That's what I'm working for. And so he is a hireling and not concerned about the sheep. It says in Acts chapter 20, of course, there it's under the picture of a wolf. It says they do not spare the flock. They really don't care about the church. It's testimony, it's peace, it's purity, it's soundness, it's unity. They won't spare the flock. They don't care. Ruthless. And the hireling does not care. He's in it for the money. Balaam, you know, it says he loved the wages of unrighteousness. He went and prophesied because they gave him some money. He wasn't going to do it, but they got lucrative enough that he did. And this comes up over and over again. It's surprising just how in those verses that I gave you this morning about the false shepherds, how often that comes up, this matter of selfishness, and especially money. I mean, sometimes it's like their God is their belly and things like that, but often it brings out the money feature, like Balaam. In Titus 1, it says their mouth must be stopped because they're saying things for the sake of sordid gain. And in Peter, it says, you shepherd the flock not for the sake of money. And a hireling. Matthew 23, you've got the Pharisees, they devour widows' houses. Judas Iscariot was in it for the money. That man in Judges 17, that Levite, that young Levite, you know, he went out looking for a place to preach, really. And they hired him, you know. And then when somebody else came along with offering a bigger ministry, why, he went over there to the Danites, was it? And so this is a trait of a false shepherd. I was reminded by Charles one time on a tape of B.B. Caldwell, how that he said, you'll either pay to preach or be paid not to preach. Either pay to preach, in other words, either live sacrificially, or else you'll be paid not to preach. That is, if you're in it for the money, why you'll pull your punches and be a false preacher. It says in Philippians chapter 2 that Timothy, Paul says, I don't have anybody else like Timothy who is naturally concerned for your, sincerely, genuinely concerned for your welfare. Genuinely concerned for your welfare. He was a true pastor. And then the last is the wolf. Verse 12, he sees the wolf coming, leaves the sheep, and the wolf snatches and scatters them. An attribute, a trait of the wolf is that he snatches and scatters. In Matthew 7, they're called ravenous wolves. In Acts 20, they are called grievous. In the New American, it's savage wolves. But it'd be better translated grievous, weighty, burdensome wolves. I mean, they're grievous. They hurt, they tear, they snatch, they scatter. They cause division. And that is an attribute of the wolf, in contrast to the good shepherd. In verse 16, is it? I must bring them also, and they will be one flock with one shepherd. The Lord is gathering, the wolf is scattering. So, that is all. In contrast, I love this verse 10. The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Life, in contrast to destruction and death. Life. More than just, you know, a good existence. The Lord's talking about real life, spiritual life. He's talking about being born again and contact with the living God, spiritual life, the life of Christ, and then in that world to come, immortality. Life in contrast to death, joy in contrast to depression, goodness in contrast to evil, all that involved, all that life is with a capital L. I've come, that's the source. I've come that they might have life. Why did the Lord come? There it is. And to what degree? Abundantly. We start out a lot of times as a Christian just kind of squeaking along. A lot of fears, a lot of anxieties, a lot of question marks, a lot of things we don't understand, don't know about. The Bible is still pretty dark to us. And we go on walking with God, and the path becomes brighter and brighter and wider in a sense. And life becomes abundant. Life becomes full. Life in Christ, the sweetness and the joy and the fullness. Life abundant. Victory over sin, and more victory, and more peace. Peace flowing like a river. And so it is with a good shepherd. Life and life abundant.